I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Well, let's get to it on this Friday afternoon. I don't think there's really much happening, frankly. Of course, we have the whole Weinstein sexual harassment issue, and that's going to go on for a long time. No one's going to get thrown in jail. No one's going to get fined. No suits are going to get settled. And we don't need to think much beyond the Bill Cosby situation to understand the courts simply do not move very fast on these issues. Now, of course, there have already been some major settlements offline, and that's fine, but if it goes to court, the chances are it goes on forever and ever. And I can only believe the settlements are made because they're trying to protect advertisers from public disclosure of this kind of information. And of course, that's over now. Anybody who's ever sexually harassed a woman in the workplace, probably just go ahead and resign now. Because let's face it, they're coming out of the woodwork and men are resigning. I am waiting for the first woman to be accused of sexual harassment. And it will come, I believe, sooner or later. So I'm not going to really do much with the whole issue of sexual harassment. It's about time that those things get taken care of in the workplace. And it looks like it's finally happening. No matter how bad you think things are, or how secretive you think things are, or how you think things are covered up, it's amazing what comes out over time. And we're hearing this now in another area where we have the JFK materials coming forward. It's already been clear that one of the reasons the CIA and the FBI want this material redacted is because it would embarrass them. It shows, A, how much information they had but didn't act on something. There are many examples of that. And how they acted on things with very little information, you know, trivial pieces of information. So the whole idea that it should be redacted for those reasons is kind of silly. I hope Trump just releases them all to the public. I can't believe there's any national security issues, but if you've read anything about it, then you've already read about how the CIA paid bounties for assassinating people in Cuba. Fidel Castro was worth so much money. His officers were worth so much money. Now they had a plan to drop leaflets on Cuba with bounties on these people's heads. Yes, we have a lot of moral superiority, don't we? And that's why the CIA and the FBI don't want these things to come out, is because people will realize that those institutions that we believe are sacred, that those institutions that we believe are honest and have a high level of morality, they haven't. And people have done things that are totally politically motivated, including offering bounties to assassinate other world leaders like Castro. So why should we be so surprised at some of the problems we're hearing today? The whole issue, for example, of the Russian collusion, that probably won't come out for another 25 or 30 years. The uranium issue with the Clintons, that's incredible to me. And I've heard no one, no Democrat, no Hillary Clinton, no Obama, respond to the simple question. On what basis did you agree to sell 20% of the United States uranium to Russia? Did we need the money? Simple question. Everyone knows it's a national security issue. We sold something that's very important to us to somebody we consider to be our number one competitor. But we did it. I watched Tucker Carlson, and he's tried to get these answers from people, but he doesn't get them. People don't respond. People interview Hillary Clinton. They don't say, Clinton, Hillary Clinton, why did you agree to sell the uranium to the Russians? What's the answer for that? I'm sure they don't ask her that question because her answer would be too embarrassing. What possible answer could you give? Could you give, well, gee, we needed the money, or, well, you know, they were going to make a big donation to my foundation, or we were trying to create a dialogue with Russia. What answer would make sense? And remember, these are the same people, the Obamas, well, the Obama, I say Obama, but I really mean the Clinton-Obama group, the Democrats in general, that flew a plane load of cash to Iran. And don't think for a minute that any of that cash trickled down to the Iranian people. I can't even believe that happened. Remember, picture this. A C-5 cargo plane lands in Tehran, Iran at the airport. And on this plane are pallets loaded with cash in German currency, Swiss currency, French currency, U.S. dollars. They unload these with forklifts. Can you imagine? Stacks of millions and millions of dollars. I believe it was a total of $1.5 billion. I don't care whether that was theirs or not theirs. The issue is just sending that much cash to another country. Why not just write them a check and see who cashes it? We'll never know where the cash went. Now, I know Iran now has moved on. They've bought some planes from Boeing. They've bought some planes from Airbus. So now we have an economic reason to stay with them and them with us. And maybe that's a good thing that came out of this whole situation. Maybe that's a positive output. Because it does mean that Americans will have to be over there training them. Oh, wait a minute, training them to do what? To fly airplanes, to build airplanes, to manufacture parts maybe in Iran. Well, what do airplanes do? They fly over other countries and are capable of bombing things. So a country that didn't have its own airline or airplanes for years now is going to wind up with a fleet of airplanes with trained pilots to fly them. And who knows, maybe they'll buy a fighter or two from Boeing. And on top of that, they've got plenty of cash. And on top of that, they will eventually have the right to build nuclear weapons again. The timeline that was established by the Iranian deal only deferred the rate at which they could become a nuclear power. It didn't eliminate it. It's like so many things, we just push them off to the future, hoping they will go away. So one listener writes in to me and he says, can you defend Trump's intelligence? And the answer is, no, I can't. I can't defend anybody's intelligence. Is Trump intelligent, though? In my opinion, absolutely. Does he do a lot of stupid things? Yes, he does. And I know a lot of intelligent people that do stupid things, too. And he does his share. I don't know that he'd be in as much trouble if he was president in 1960 because he wouldn't have the same social media to work with as he does now. Social media comes with its pros and cons. But I've been alive for quite a while, and I lived through one of the most political misunderstood times of my life, and of course that was the Vietnam War, which started somewhere in the late 50s, accelerated in the 60s, and didn't get over till, I believe, in 1975 with the fall of Saigon. And remember, it was a civil war. The North Vietnam wanted to make South Vietnam part of Vietnam, kind of like the civil war we had here in America. But we went over and got on the side of the South Vietnamese, and China and the Russians got on the side of the North Vietnamese. And next thing you know, thousands of Americans were killed, and eventually we left. And before we got there, by the way, the French were there for 10 or 15 years trying to do the same thing, as I recall, and they weren't successful. Now, I remember, in terms of what I call political lies, that Johnson, who became president after Kennedy, ran for president against Barry Goldwater. Goldwater wrote, I think, a great book called The Conscience of a Conservative. And Goldwater said, we will not go to Vietnam, or if we go, we will just simply flatten the country, but it will not have a partial war. Johnson said, we're not going to war in Vietnam, and Goldwater is a warmonger. Guess who got elected? Johnson. Guess what happened? Within the first year, we had 200,000 people, or military, on the ground in Vietnam, and it never stopped after that. Johnson decided not to run again because he couldn't solve it. Nixon spent I don't know how many years with Kissinger talking about the domino theory, but also talking about things like, how can we get out of Vietnam with our pride? Screw that. We should have been trying to get out of Vietnam without losing any more lives. At what point do you kill more people to justify the people already that have been killed? But see, younger people haven't lived through that period, so they consider these kind of skirmishes that Trump has with the senators as being important. They're not. What he says to Senator Corker and what they say to Senator Flake is nothing compared to what went going on during the Vietnam War. The lies that were told by our institutions. Read about Secretary McNamara. He finally came out and said that he knew we couldn't win that war, but couldn't express that publicly at the time. So in defense of Trump's intelligence, I'd much rather him fight on Twitter than fight with another country somewhere else. Now, to that end, I heard a strange thing last night on Tucker Carlson. He was interviewing one of the Democrats, and one of the Democrats said, well, you know, the whole thing with the tax issue is that taxes aren't that important, but the Republicans need to reduce the taxes just so they can say they have done something. And of course, Carlson called him out on that because reducing taxes are important in and of themselves, not just as a dart in the board that you have accomplished something. Now, words are important, but paper obviously is important too. So in 1922, when paper was pretty cheap, bread was 9 cents a loaf, Einstein gives a sheet of paper to a young person in place of a tip with this theory of a happy life. Now, you may have already read what his theory of a happy life was, but it's pretty clear that his theory of a happy life is a lot cheaper than the notepaper which his theory was written on. Now, for those of you who haven't heard his theory of a happy life, here's what it is. A calm and modest life brings more happiness than the pursuit of success combined with constant restlessness. Written in German, and the notes sold for, that particular note, with his signature from 1922, so we have, what, almost 100 years later, it sold for $1.56 million. I don't understand it. But I know this, some wealthy person is going to have that framed in his house, and other wealthy people will go visit him, and he will say, I just paid $1.56 million for Einstein's theory of happiness. But that's an illusion. I just read you Einstein's theory of happiness, and it cost you nothing. So this person paid $1.56 million for the piece of paper that had Einstein's theory of happiness on it with his signature. It's just stupid in my mind. The things we collect and the things we pay for tell me a lot about what we're all about as a society. And I'm also pretty sure that Einstein didn't do nearly as much research on his theory of happiness as he did for his theories in physics. So that's about all the main things I'm going to say now about Einstein, but a couple things about Amazon. You've probably heard by now that Amazon is announcing this new service delivery where they'll put your packages inside your home. And as part of that, they send you a video camera that you can record the person entering and watch it from your iPhone via the internet at some other location. Do we understand what's really going on here? It's not about putting a box inside your house. It's because they want to deliver food to your house with their purchase of Whole Foods. It won't be long before they will be announcing that they'll put your food that can go bad, such as lettuce, in your refrigerator for you as part of the delivery process. I'm telling you, I don't know what Amazon's price is today, but they may own most of America. We're going to be buying our food online through Amazon Echo devices and have it delivered to our home, and some of it is going to be put in our refrigerator so that it doesn't spoil when we're away. Amazon is just putting all the pieces in place. They want to own your home. They want to own what you buy. They're going to let Google have the advertising market. Who cares? They get some of that anyway. They want to be the person you buy everything from. Don't you get it? They may buy Toyota or buy General Motors. They want you to buy cars too. They have the grand unifying theory of marketing, which is Bob Sherwood is going to buy several million dollars with of stuff in his lifetime. That's if Bob Sherwood was 20 years old. A doctor might buy $4 million of stuff during his lifetime. And guess what? Amazon wants to sell that doctor and sell Bob Sherwood all that stuff. Clothes, food, cars. Yes, your house. They may buy Zillow. They may buy a realtor. Because why? Because they've got a foundation, a digital foundation that they can use for selling anything. They just need to own the content. I don't know. Maybe they'll buy Netflix, or maybe they'll just put Netflix out of business. They have so much purchasing power and delivery power. Don't put it beyond them to buy somebody like UPS or FedEx. Or another 300 or 400 grocery stores. They want to sell you everything that you want to buy in your whole lifetime. The cradle to grave philosophy. And they're going about doing it. And no one else is even close. I don't know. Maybe they'll buy Apple. Or buy Samsung. You see what I'm driving at? A long time ago, maybe 25 or 30 years ago, I did a report for a company, and I talked about looking at a customer in terms of everything that customer would buy. Let's take cars, for example. I buy 5 cars in my lifetime, average price, $40,000. That's $200,000 worth of cars. If a single dealer would take care of me, I'd probably buy all those cars from a single dealer, but they don't. Once I buy my car, I'd seldom hear from the dealer, except maybe about maintenance. Oh, I'm getting a few more emails now, but not as many as I should be getting if they want to keep me as a permanent car buying customer. It's the grand unifying theory of marketing. Amazon wants to sell it all. If you're a content provider, a book publisher, you have some product, they want you to sell through them. They're the ultimate distribution channel. My gosh, think of what they have out for bids now. A new headquarters location that will employ 50,000 people. 50,000. That's 50,000 families. That's like 200,000 people. That's 25 or 30,000 soccer moms. Think about it. It's incredible. Who else is even close to that? And they have bids from 200 cities. Does anybody even get the full import of that? Whatever city is picked for those 50,000 jobs for that new Amazon headquarters, the property in that city is just going to accelerate. And not just because of Amazon, it's because Amazon hires expensive people. They hire programmers, and programmers work for Amazon, then leave, start new companies. They are their own ecosystem. When you find out where Amazon is going to build their headquarters, sell your house and move there, because your house is going to double in price in the next 5 or 6 years. It'll probably double or go up by 20% the day they announce. I'm going to come back to Amazon in a second. I'm going to put this whole podcast on hold and come back with a couple of other interesting tidbits. So we're back again, and what's coming up here is an article in the Washington Post that basically says how Mitch McConnell declared open warfare on Wednesday against Stephen K. Bannon. What does this even mean, open warfare? All Bannon is doing is telling the Republicans, get your butts together. You're not even doing anything yet. He's trying to get Republicans unelected or not reelected if they don't get behind some conservative views. Now, here's a view that I heard the other night, which is the last thing I'm going to share with you today. That is that Corker, and I think the guy is Flake, have said, oh, we're not running for reelection, therefore we can now tell the truth. That's pretty much what they've been saying. So now they're criticizing Trump, and they're taking what I called almost the high road of, I've given up my life in the Senate because I don't feel I can do that anymore because of Trump, and so I'm going to do something else. But here's the point. The irony is that these people are saying they can't be reelected because they've been against Trump. Think about it. They're saying, I can't be reelected because I've been against Trump. Well, the premise that they start with is that Trump is bad. Well, if Trump is so bad, then why shouldn't they be able to get reelected easily? But no. They say they can't be reelected because even though Trump is bad, he still commands a lot of votes. Doesn't make sense to me. Gee, we don't like Trump. He's this, he's that, he's got a horrible personality, et cetera, et cetera. We can't control him. He's a kid. And all the critical comments they make about Trump, yet they realize that he has a great following. And he does. And it's Republicans should simply recognize it and try to understand it. Yeah, I mean, Trump sends out through Twitter some absolutely stupid things, no question about it. He's a business person. But the one thing we know about Trump, he doesn't care about being reelected. Most of our politicians, what is their number one concern? Getting reelected. They want to be reelected. So they're doing things that enhance the reelection process. Trump doesn't care one bit. He'd make more money not being president than being president. He has more fun not being president than being president. He takes less haranguing not being president. There's no motivation for him to be president, frankly. Everybody picks on his wife, they pick on his kids, they pick on him. If he didn't want to do something positive for America, he would just go play golf. He doesn't need to be president to satisfy his own ego. This is what people need to understand. This is what makes his message persuasive. He doesn't need to be reelected, doesn't care. He actually wants to do something. Show me a politician, and I understand they want to do something, but they're driven for reelection because the way the whole Congress is set up, it's by seniority. You have to be there a long time to get to a place of power. What's the lady from California who's over 80 years old is going to run again? And she says, well, I'm a great leader. Why doesn't somebody just ask her, you are a great leader because why? Because you raise more money for Democrats than anyone else. And she does. And that's why, if she runs again, she'll be elected. And that's why the Democrats support her. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Follow the cash, and you find the truth. Find the source of the cash, and you find the reason for what is going on. So, I couldn't defend Trump I can't defend Trump's intelligence, but if you think he's not smart, then you obviously have to be wrong. Does that mean I didn't do a good job of defending it? No, but the guy is smart. Is he genius level? Is he book level smart? I don't think so. Is he street level smart? Absolutely. Do I trust him? I trust him to do the best thing for America because he doesn't care if he's going to be elected again. And he sees things that I can't possibly see. So yes, I do trust him. I think lowering taxes is the right way to go. I think controlling our borders is the right way to go. I think letting Tillerson do what he's doing in North Korea is the right way to go. And yes, the secretaries of all of their departments don't have to agree with Trump, because that's what it is in business. The vice presidents in business don't always agree with the president. Sometimes they disagree. Good presidents of companies don't want vice presidents that just agree with them all the time. That's called pandering. Trump gets intelligent people, and yes, they do disagree with him. But that doesn't mean they're on their own different page. And that's all I'm going to say for today on all those issues. This is Bob Sherwood with Web Talk with Bob, signing off on this Friday, October the 27th. There's not a lot happening right now. There's a lot of popular things going on, like sexual harassment and the uranium suit, the tax issues. But nothing right now is going on that affects me or maybe even you in the next 12 months. Maybe the tax issues will, but let's face it, by the time those things get rolled out, it'll take a fine-tooth comb and a professional accountant with a CPA to figure out what the new tax plan is. Why? Because it's words. And by the way, the simplified tax plan, my guess, the document itself with the new tax plan will be over 1,000 pages long. I'm looking forward to getting my copy and reading it. Signing off for today. WebTalkWithBob@gmail.com. Signing off. Have a great day. Thanks for listening, and pass this podcast along. Bob brought to you courtesy of